The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse.
The beast.
We're told in the book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan. Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
They're here.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
From the heart of the Ozarks, I am Derek Gilbert.
I am Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to our Ozarkian bunker.
Yes.
You know, it's a rocky place, but we like it that way.
It is. It is. Yeah.
It's a rocky five place.
Well, true. As we record this on Sunday, September 6th of 2015,
your voice is starting to sound like mine.
Yeah, a little raspy. Well, because from all the grass and stuff kicked up earlier today, we mowed the back 40 and the front 40 and the...
And the middle 40.
The side 40. So we get a little bit of dust and grass, which I'm allergic to.
Yeah.
Not that that ever got me into mowing the lawn when I was a kid.
Well, which is why I did. Aw, honey.
I know.
Well, that's why I try to do it.
Help, I'm being oppressed. Sorry.
Your mom's going to run in here.
Yeah, that's right.
All the way from Marionville. No, that's why I try to do the lawn as much as I can. But honestly, I have weenie arms and I can only do so much. Now, we cut about 2 acres of lawn and most of that's done on the riding mower.
Yes.
But there's a little bit inside Sam's fence that we don't have a way to get the riding mower in there. Mm-hmm. So it's right over the
septic tank.
So
the area inside the fence is referred to as Dachshundia.
Oh, yeah. It's got a little flag out there.
Yeah, it has a very, minor key sounding national anthem.
I am Dachshundia.
That's it.
You are not. Of course, I was at a major key. He would have sung in a minor key.
Yeah, yeah.
Although he says he's not minor at all.
No,
he's totally major.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So anyway,
total ruler of Dachshundia. Yeah. Yeah, so,
and even though Derek is you know, sort of recovering from his adventure with Sam and Dachshundia last weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Spraining his ankle.
What's 2 weeks ago now?
It is 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And we want to thank you for praying for that because honestly, it's healing pretty quickly. But and he actually was able to go out and hobble around behind him, push more, and finish what I couldn't because, like I say, I got weenie arms.
Well, those work boots I've got, offer little ankle support because they're high tops. So
they're better than the flip flops I wear.
Yeah. Yeah.
I tried wearing my boots out there one time to cut the grass, and I couldn't take it. It just made my feet too hot. Mm. My body temperature seems to rely heavily on my feet, which is why I cut the lawn in flip-flops. Yeah.
No, I'm not going out there with open toes when I'm working with a mower. Thankfully, those work boots, four bucks at Goodwill.
And, I know. Don't you love that?
Yeah, about a month ago, the soles actually separated from the shoes themselves. So spent another $4 on shoe goo to come back together.
They sensed danger and ejected themselves. It works!
So anyway, the Lord provides and we are thankful.
Oh,
so,
gosh.
And I really am thankful because, the first couple of days I was on crutches. And then we've been using a cane most of the time up until about the last 2 days. So, for this to heal so quickly, because I've heard from some fellows who said, oh, man, I limped for 3 years after spraining my ankle. So this could have been a whole lot worse.
Oh, yeah.
If you didn't hear the story, I had Sam on the leash out in the front yard because he likes to go out in the front to, explore areas for potential annexation to Dachshundia. And he was
that
running.
That may come next year.
Yeah, he was running, and I was watching him to make sure I didn't step on him while I was running. Because, I weigh 230 pounds. If I step on Sam, it would be really bad. But I was watching him, not my feet. And there's a hole in the front yard. And I kind of rolled my ankle. But it's much, much better. So no problems there. So, hey,
He was just trying to keep you away from the road. You know how excited when you see the road and all the cars going by.
Dad wants to cross to the other side where they've got that fence.
So I have to run back to the house to make sure he doesn't get out there.
That's it.
Maybe next year. We're saving up so we can put a Sam Doxundia annex in the front yard.
That's
so
right.
We can just open the front door and let him go.
He needs a national flag. It would probably look like those Soviet propaganda posters from the 30s.
Oh, yeah. Obey the dachshund.
Exactly it. Well, boy, you know what? It is amazing with all of the things happening in the world and some of the big issues that are taking place that we get fixated on one poor woman in Kentucky who has decided to follow what she believes is the Lord's leading in the performance of her duties. And I'm talking, of course, about the county clerk in Rowan County, Kentucky, Kim Davis.
You know, it used to be that there were allowances made for people who were conscientious objectors. Mm-hmm. In other words, the government asked you to do something, and oftentimes it's related to serving in the military.
Right.
But you are asked to or tasked with doing something by the government, and you say, I can't. My own personal religious beliefs say I cannot do that. Well, most of the time, we don't have to make that choice between serving the Lord and doing our jobs.
Mm-hmm.
But I've told you, that I believe in free will. I think people get to choose to do whatever they want to do. But when I am asked to do something that enables that,
mm-hmm.
then that borders on, I don't know, maybe, so I think I probably would have done the same thing.
Yeah, it's a tough situation to be in because first of all, Rowan County, Kentucky is not the only county in the United States where clerks have refused to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples.
No, it's not.
It's one of 14, if I understand the news correctly. So she's not the only one.
And had she been a Muslim, she might have made a similar decision. In fact, there's a story out today that a Muslim woman refused to serve alcohol on an airline.
Right.
And lost her job.
Yeah. Now, there's a key point of difference there in that becoming a flight attendant on an airline, about half your job is serving alcohol to passengers on the planes.
I know. Why would she become an... I know.
Right.
I agree with that.
Right. Now, in the case of Kim Davis, she was elected to the position of county clerk after spending 28 years as a deputy clerk. Her mother was the county clerk before.
Mm-hmm. Small area.
Yeah, and in Kentucky, it is legal to hire family members and to control, and determine salary for family members on the county payroll.
And honestly, in some of these small counties, everybody's related to everybody else. So
that's true.
So it would be unusual to hire somebody that wasn't a relative in some way.
Right. So, setting all that aside, when she was elected in January, gay marriage was not legal in the state of Kentucky, the Commonwealth of Kentucky.
Right.
And that, of course, changed on June 28th when the Supreme Court of the United States, five justices of the Supreme Court, voted that it should be legal in all 57 states.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 50 under President Bush. It's 57 under President Obama. I'm being snarky. I shouldn't. Anyway, therein lies the situation. It's difficult. I mean, there are some Christians who say, well, look, this is her job. And part of her job is issuing marriage licenses. And she's not actually marrying the couple. She's just acknowledging that
she's
the couple
giving
in
them
question,
permission to get married,
that they have fulfilled all of the legal requirements under the Commonwealth of Kentucky
mm-hmm.
to be married.
Yeah. And I know that it's a gray area where, the truth is if I had an opportunity to stand before the Lord and ask this directly, he may say, no, you're not sinning by doing this. I don't know. But I think that rather than I would err on the side of caution
mm-hmm.
as far as my service to the Lord. What if, though, this were a person who worked for a place that issued concealed carry permits?
And refused.
And said, I can't, in good conscience, give you this concealed carry because I am anti-gun.
Yeah.
Then why are you working there?
That's a valid question. The other aspect of this is that it's not just that she refused to put her name on the marriage license. She also refused to allow her deputies in the county clerk's office to issue the licenses. Yeah.
Now, to be fair, this was probably one of those gotcha kind of things where people came. It looks like may have come in from outside the county.
Let's just put it this way. Most people who apply for a marriage license at a county clerk's office don't come with like 15 different media outlets carrying cameras and digital recorders. So, yeah, there was a gotcha here.
Yeah.
Let's make an example of this particular woman. She is an member of an apostolic Christian church.
Yeah.
Which is, very...
Very conservative.
Very conservative, Pentecostal.
Mm-hmm.
And
I applaud her for doing what she believed was the right thing to do.
Right.
The thing is, and you and I talked about this at length this morning, can we actually make a difference as Christians by trying to change the laws? Hillary Clinton would say, yeah, you got to change laws because that's the only way. It's top-down kind of thinking.
Right, right.
If I change the laws, eventually I will change behavior. That's not how it works. You got to change hearts to change behavior.
Exactly.
So trying to find remedy in the law is really not what we're called to do as believers.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. The only type of grassroots change will take place when people's hearts are changed. And sadly, the reason we have homosexual marriage in the United States, the reason that abortion is still mostly legal in the United States, is because too many people don't believe it's wrong. And they don't understand why the Word of God should have any bearing on their decision of right and wrong.
And the truth is that if every individual on the face of the earth became a Christian today, the world would change a little, maybe a lot, but sin would still exist.
Yes.
Because we are fallen by nature.
That is correct. That is correct.
The best intended Christian will still fail.
Yeah. The frightening thing is how, and it's not totally unexpected because Jesus told us that this would come.
Yeah.
I mean, the world hated him. I mean, nailed him on the cross. Okay.
Yeah.
So we shouldn't expect any better treatment. We've had kind of an easy ride, Christians have. In these United States, since the Civil War, it's the United States.
Well, that's just it. It's no longer since the Civil War, states' rights have completely eroded to the point now where states have no rights.
Yeah. Supporters of gay marriage like to point out that something like 36, 37 states had legalized gay marriage prior to the Supreme Court decision, but only 9 actually voted for it. I think in the other 25 or 26 states, whatever it was imposed by judicial fiat.
Yeah.
Yeah, justices imposed it on those states.
Yeah.
It was not something that was supported by the people.
Yeah, but again, we can't look to laws to make a difference.
Right.
And the thing is, as Americans, it's part of our DNA to say, well, we've got to change the law.
That's right.
Because we're going to vote, we're going to go to the polls, and we're going to change things.
We got to stop these people from behaving in ways that we disapprove of. Well, the problem is not the law or the lack thereof. I mean, yes, we do need to legislate against certain types of behavior that affect, say, personal safety and things like that, impose penalties for, illegalities. I understand that. But when it comes to issues like this, like social issues, like gay marriage in particular, because that's such a hot button issue, we can make it illegal. But does that really mean that even one person who supports it would suddenly change his heart and accept the biblical definition of marriage?
Yeah.
No. And in that respect, then how is God pleased? How is God pleased? I don't think he is at all. If enough people were to accept the biblical definition of marriage, which is, kind of redundant because it is the definition of marriage, there would be no need for a law because nobody wanted, homosexuality is immoral. That's not to say there still wouldn't be people who would find themselves attracted to members of the same sex. But, if you understand that, this is not the way we're supposed to live, I'm just going to have to deal with this.
Well,
I mean, there are certain sins to which I am attracted, certain sins to which all of us are attracted.
Exactly.
And we don't try to redefine sin and morality in order to accommodate our desires most of the time.
Yeah.
But in this case, in this particular issue, that is in fact the case. What is frightening, though, is the way Kim Davis is being pilloried by supporters of homosexual marriage. I actually saw a tweet earlier today in which she was, in which those who are supporting Kim Davis in her action are being accused of, first of all, being afraid of Sharia law And the irony being that people afraid of Sharia are supporting Kim Davis for acting just like people under Sharia would, doing just what Sharia law would do. And I was like, wait a minute. Sharia law dictates execution, punishment by death for homosexuality.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, do you not remember on June 28th when the Islamic State celebrated the Supreme Court decision by pushing four gay men off a building and tweeting out the pictures under the hashtag Love Wins? Come on. And this is what John Haller was telling me about some time back. He was in a conversation with some attorneys, and he was talking about the mayor of Houston, who was the target of a lawsuit filed by a group in Houston that opposed the ordinance there.
That they had to turn in their sermons?
Yeah. And I forget what the lawsuit was about. It related to a city ordinance, I think, that allowed transgender or people who identified as transgender to use the opposite sex bathroom, something like that. Anyway, there was a lawsuit filed because a ballot initiative had been undertaken, and they had obtained like 50,000 signatures, something like four times the number required under Houston law to put this vote, to put this ballot initiative on the ballot. And the city government refused to accept them, said, no, these are bad. We can't take these, no good. And so they just declared that they weren't going to put that initiative to repeal that ordinance on the ballot. So there was a lawsuit filed. A number of pastors in the area spoke about it publicly, and the city attorney demanded sermons and sermon notes.
Oh, that's what led up to that.
Right. And so, you know, John Haller said, you know, boy, can you believe those Nazis? And the attorney's like, yeah, those pastors are really out of control. What? But that's the America in which we live today.
I know.
I mean, people equating a woman who's willing to go to jail with people who are willing to kill.
I know. Earlier today when we were doing Gilbert House Fellowship, you and I were talking about the joy and the wonder of living in the last days.
Yeah.
A time when Jesus Christ could be returning within our lifetimes, mm-hmm. probably very soon. Mm-hmm. There's another side to that, and that is living in the days that he said would happen, mm-hmm. the signs that would occur in the days before he comes back.
Yeah.
We see that our liberties, our in fact, in some cases, our very lives hang in the balance because of what we believe and what we are unafraid. And I pray that you and I will always be unafraid to say what we feel. You and I have always said in the 10 plus years of PID Radio and VFDB that we believe in free will, which means other people get to exercise free will.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is when you say, my choice has to be your choice.
Right.
And we as Christians shouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Other people get free will, nor should they do that to us.
But exactly.
The problem is that the world is spinning around and it's turning upside down, and we are being told we are intolerant for saying what we believe.
Yeah.
Where everyone else gets to say what they believe, and we have to tolerate that, yet it doesn't come the other way around.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're just going to have to deal with it because that's the other side of the joy of being here.
Right.
While waiting his return.
Right. And the problem and the temptation is, and I respond to that type of vitriol with vitriol.
Yeah.
And if we do that, then we are falling into the enemy's trap of displaying whatever the opposite of love is. That would be it, you know?
Yeah.
And that isn't going to win anybody to Christ. That, in fact, will be a stumbling block to them coming to Christ.
Yeah.
And that's something I have to keep reminding myself because you know me, you know, Mr. Old, you know, high school debate team captain wanting to rise to the challenge. But that's not going to get it. That's not going to do it.
I'm going to crush you in Christian love.
Exactly. Yeah. Bash you in. Welcome to the punch in the face room. And here we go.
Well, so, yeah, left turn. Let's do a left turn because I want to tell you about the gospel chorus that greeted a certain presidential candidate in New Hampshire.
Uh-huh. Okay.
A women's alternative chorus was singing a gospel tune.
Yeah.
Let me just go to this story so I can actually see the content. At a Hillary Clinton campaign event Saturday in Portsmouth, New Hampshire,
okay.
A woman's alternative chorus from town known as Voices from the Heart got together and serenaded the presidential frontrunner. She's the frontrunner.
She's trailing Bernie Sanders by 9 points in New Hampshire.
They sang.
She's trailing the socialist.
I know. They sang a gospel song called Woke Up This Morning with Jesus on My Mind.
Yeah.
With my mind on Jesus, sorry.
Okay.
But they didn't use Jesus. They substituted someone else's name. Woke up this morning with my mind staying on Hillary. Woke up this morning with my mind staying on Hillary. Hallelujah, 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 hallelujah.
Okay, well, they need to look up the definition of gospel.
Well, they do indeed. This is, sorry, but this is just really inappropriate. You know, if they want to choose to vote for her, fine. And if they want to sing a song for her, fine. But please don't take a song that is all about the love that Jesus has for us and our love for him and insert her name or any human's name.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't put Donald Trump's in there. Don't put George Bush's in there. Mm-hmm. Don't put anybody's in there. Don't put mine in there. Don't put, Sam T. Dachson says, you may put mine in there.
Yeah.
long as it's the Dachshundia tune.
Yeah. Hillary is... boy, just, you know, switching to politics for a quick second. Her campaign is really in trouble, and I suspect that the Obama administration is behind it. They don't like the Clintons, and I think Mr. Obama would rather see Joe Biden get into the office.
Well, a series of emails, and I honestly didn't read the article. I just saw the headline this morning, have indicated that they are what's being termed frenemies.
Yeah.
Friendly enemies.
Yeah. Well... with Hillary, that means, you know, just make sure you double up on your bodyguard. It is bizarre. You know, it's not surprising seeing that Donald Trump has taken such a lead in the Republican polls, because he is really tapping into a deep-rooted anger out here in the heartland over what's been done with our country over the last 8 years. But even more than that, longer than that. I mean, there are politicians back 10 years ago when we were in Columbia and I was talking to the local heads of the Democratic and Republican parties who would admit privately that at the national level, the two main political parties in America have no touch whatsoever. They're completely out of touch with the...
Well, they have been for a long time.
Yeah.
I keep hearing this hiss. Trying to figure out if it's something I'm doing.
Yeah.
Sam? Oh, lost my train of thought. We were talking politics, and I said something.
Well,
I'll think of it in a minute.
You want a left turn to the upcoming big Halloween party in the Netherlands?
You know,
Amsterdam. Amsterdam.
Yeah, a gal sent that to me on Facebook, and sorry, I think it was. I'm going to Facebook now because I don't want to misspeak. And I really appreciate it when people send me stories. Oftentimes when I get them, I've already seen it because, honestly, we're up at 5:30 every morning.
Right.
Start digging into the news. But this one I had not seen. It's Karen Michelle Garner.
Okay.
And Karen, forgive me if I said your name and you preferred that I didn't, but I want to thank you for sending it to me. It was a story about plans in the Netherlands in Amsterdam to have a blood rave.
Yeah.
Very similar to, for Halloween, similar to the opening of the movie Blade.
Yeah. Well, Blade is, that goes back about 15, 17 years now. Wesley Snipes, one of his breakout roles, he plays the half vampire hunter. And the opening scene shows a bunch of people in a club being sprayed with blood from the ceiling. And apparently the organizers of this event are trying to recreate that sort of party using the, like the fire suppression system, the sprinkler system, basically.
That's it. And I read the article, and again, thank you for sending it to me. One of the problems, apparently, legally, is the use of actual blood. Because of bloodborne pathogens,
sure,
there
yeah.
are probably going to be a lot of objections to this, but not because of anything spiritual going on, not because of the message it's sending to young
exactly.
people. It's because of health and safety.
Yeah. But the actual truth is that, you know, whatever kind of blood they use, even if they use animal blood, this is really reprehensible.
It is reprehensible.
Yeah. Oh, and somebody asked
this
important question.
But they want to use human blood.
Yeah. And well, somebody had asked about this, you know, what kind of blood will you use, pig or cow? Because pig might be a problem for certain people because of religious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. If they're really that religious.
Especially now in Europe, because honestly, more and more people in Europe are
in
coming
Amsterdam.
From other countries.
Yeah. As if people who really took their religion seriously would be engaged in that type of a thing where they'd be sprayed by blood.
Yeah, you'd think that they wouldn't.
You wouldn't think so, would you?
Well,
but you never know. But the sad thing is that this kind of thing would even be proposed. And what I think this is just another example that the hardcore new atheists are really, you know, more and more, they've got to feel even more isolated and more alone than Christians in Europe, because it's pretty clear that Europe, which is farther along this post-Christian track than America is not going atheist. It's going pagan.
Yeah.
It's going pagan.
Yeah, pagan or Muslim.
Yeah.
There are large pockets that have gone Muslim.
That's very true, and there may come a reckoning between those groups.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that statistics show France has more Muslims than practicing Roman Catholics right now. But there is a rise in most of the nations in Europe of the far-right nationalist white supremacist parties in some cases.
Oh, yeah.
And I think there's a day coming when the Europeans are going to, you know, rise up and say, hey, this isn't going to go. It's going to get ugly. It's really going
to
get ugly.
It's starting already to get ugly. And you know, that's the thing. We need to, as believers who really take the word of God for what it is, truth, we need to be praying for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, not just pray for those in our camp, but pray for all the Muslims there that are there too. That first of all, that they would hear the truth, that someone would witness to them. But more than that, that they would remain safe. I mean, there are a lot of Muslims, Christians, other ethnic groups that are fleeing war-torn areas. And we saw this horrific image of a little boy who washed up on the shore in Syria. And that's sad. That is probably not an isolated incident. We're probably a lot of kids who are dying from various diseases, being trafficked. I mean, if you were a human trafficker going into these camps and just saying, I'm going to help you.
Yeah.
You shudder when you think about the possibilities and how, you know, when you are in dire straits, especially as a parent, you are willing to trust any little, you know, help that comes along.
Yeah. And there are stories that pop up every couple of weeks about a boat overturning in the Mediterranean with people on board were killed. A truck where, you know, people were stuffed in like, you know, in a cattle car and people, you know, suffocating. Things are getting ugly around the world. And a lot of the refugees are coming from Syria, of course, because of all of the fighting taking place there with the Islamic State controlling a big chunk of territory in the country. In fact, ISIS last week launched a surprise raid and made it into the southern districts of Damascus. I mean, that is the closest to the heart of what's still left of the Syrian government that any rebel group has come. But they actually launched a rocket. It exploded just outside the studios of Syrian state television.
Okay, my imagination just went to a spot. Let me just tell you what just flew into my head. This idea, this question, you and I were talking this morning about Mount Nebo, and I told you I read from 2 Maccabees chapter 2, where in a letter written during the Maccabean period, the sort of the last few hundred years of the B.C., era, where they were, this letter was actually written to fellow believers, fellow, you know, rebels in Egypt. And the reference was made about the prophet Jeremiah knowing that the people of Israel, of Jerusalem, going to be carried out, and that the Seleucids were going to be ravaging the temple and taking all the money and taking everything else. He took stuff out and buried, we're told in the letter, buried the Ark of the Covenant and the incense altar and the tent, the tabernacle, in a cave hidden away on Mount Nebo.
Now, this was Jeremiah who was reported to have done that. So this would have been during
the Babylonian.
The Babylonian period.
Yes. I get mixed up. So this was the Babylonian captivity.
But, yeah, but it was being recorded by one of the writers of Second Maccabees.
Exactly. So this was in the Seleucid period, but, yeah, referring to Jeremiah during the Babylonian captivity period.
Yeah, Jeremiah lived, continue on it.
But anyway, what if in this area of contention, because Mount Nebo is in the Golan Heights, what if Isis, that loves to go in and tear down all sorts of imagery and shrines that have nothing to do with their interpretation of religion, and say, hey, guess what we found? Mind you, they could be lying, but what if they knew what was in Maccabees and they said, hey, guess what we found?
Boy, well, that would be interesting. Mount Nebo is inside Jordan, so they would really have to make a strong incursion, and I would be
And they to want bet. To go into Jordan, well, and they want to go into Saudi Arabia.
I would be willing to bet that, they do. And in fact, the Saudis have been constructing a high-tech border fence along Anbar province in Iraq to keep the keep them out. But Mount Nebo is east of the Dead Sea?
Yes. On the northeast side of the Dead Sea.
Yeah. Okay, so almost due east of Jerusalem. That would be way inside Jordan. And I would
What if some terrorist group, imagination, and honestly, you don't have to really find it. All you have to say is, we did find it.
Right.
And say to the Israelis,
we've got it, and
we're going to blow it up if you don't play ball. To which either the Israelis say to themselves, we've already got it, so they can't have it. Or, oops, they've got it.
Yeah.
What do we do?
Yeah, that's really interesting.
All they would have to do is build a replica. And it would have to be more than just a box.
I was telling Sharon about that last night. I was watching History Channel 2 just because they've got some amusing programs on there, like, Ancient Aliens and stuff. And this was one about the Ark of the Covenant. And it followed an archaeologist who disregarded the elaborate instructions and details given about the Ark of the Covenant in the book of Exodus and said, no. In Deuteronomy, which is what we're studying now in the Gilbert House Fellowship, as Moses sort of retelling the history of the Israelites to the children of the first generation that left Egypt, he describes the box and just basically says, Yahweh told me to put it in a wooden box, so we put it in a wooden box. So this guy's thinking it's just a wooden box. Not
even though Exodus has very specific,
because
they didn't have any gold, he said.
Right. Yeah. Forgetting about all of the stuff in Exodus about how the Egyptians gave them all their gold to get out.
Picking and choosing the stuff he wants to believe.
Your point was well made this morning when you said, if he's not going to accept any of this other stuff, why does he believe it exists at all?
Yeah.
I mean, it's
because
ridiculous.
He's making a name for himself. Yeah, a telephone to God.
Yeah. and there are other places in the Old Testament where it's very clear that it is, the two cherubim with their wings outstretched over the sea. That is the mercy seat.
Yes.
That is where Yahweh appeared.
Mm-hmm.
That is where he was carried by the Israelites while they traveled.
Yeah.
So, this idea that it's just a wooden box to hold the tablets shows a shocking ignorance or disregard for scripture.
It's a shame because he's missing out on a whole lot. There is so much wonderful information in those books.
Yeah, absolutely. I was reading, skimming through the book that Skywatch TV was giving away for donations last month on Finding Sodom.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a little of that in there too, because the guy who, the archaeologist who was pursuing the dig was looking at many of the clues. In fact, rephrase that. He was using the Bible. I'm painting him in a bad light, and that's not correct.
I'll come in again.
Yeah, I'll come in again. He was using the Bible to mine the Bible for the clues as to the location of the cities of the plain. And based on that and the descriptions and things that you reportedly could see from various places on the plain, he locates it in the northern end of the Dead Sea instead of southeast of the Dead Sea, which is where most Bible maps place Sodom and Gomorrah. So, but again, just like in the late 19th century, when a lot of archaeologists went into the field with a shovel in one hand and a Bible in the other, I mean, that's what this fella did, to find the remnants, the remains of what he believes to be the city of Sodom, and, presents some pretty good evidence in that book. If you just pick and choose the points that you want out of the Bible, you can wind up way wrong. Like, saying the Ark is just a, you know, radio to talk to God. It's not, no.
But he said it with a really cool accent, so he's got to be right.
Yes, he sounded intelligent because he was French. Speaking of things looking for, speaking of intelligence and intelligence tests, we did a program for Skywatch TV Friday, our weekly Sci Friday video, in which we shoot for 10 minutes and wind up with 17.
You know what? The funny thing is, at the end of that, I thought, oh, I bet we went over that by a minute or two. No, by 7 minutes.
Yeah, you're the most interesting person I know. So the time goes by that quickly. I look up at the clock.
That's how I feel about you, too. You know, will you marry me?
Why, yes. Let's go to Rowan County, Kentucky. Well, you talked about something that...
I would marry you again. Any minute. In a heartbeat.
Me too, you. You talked about something and brought it up Friday that I had never heard of before. And, of course, in researching it a little bit later, I found that, of course, Gons and Basil at Quinary Caria talked about this.
Ahead of
yeah, us. We're just the slow old people who just...
Yeah, we'll eventually get there.
Yeah. Anyway, Cicada 3301... and what it might be about. It's apparently an online
recruiting
puzzle.
But is it just a puzzle?
It apparently is a recruiting tool because the initial puzzle said we're looking for some intelligent people and you have to pass this test and good luck and blah, blah, blah.
And you have to do it by deadline.
Right. And it involves a variety of challenges that
find the message in this file.
You have to take a JPEG and break it down to the digital information so you can decode the message that's embedded in the JPEG. You know, there are certain
locations. All your base are belong to us.
Yeah. Certain things that you have to, you know, find in public, like, you know, posters that have been nailed to a landmark or attached to a landmark somewhere. And some of these landmarks were on other continents, you know, in Poland and Australia and Russia and, you know, just all over the place. But the thing that struck me was, and I've not really pursued this much, so I'm certainly not an expert in this Cicada 3301, but the literary references, the cultural references that make up the puzzle all seem to be, with the exception of a reference to the Book of Ecclesiastes, are either secular or occultic, Gnostic, you know, things like Anglo-Saxon runes.
Solomon is considered, you know, by many within the occult and Kabbalah and Gnosticism and Freemasonry and all sorts of other, you know, organizations to be a great and revered, you know, part of their history.
Guy who... learn how to summon and control all these demons.
Yeah, supposedly.
The lesser key of Solomon.
Yes,
Solomon.
Exactly. Now, whether or not he really did that or not, I don't know. It's not in the Bible. And I'd like to think that if he, you know, was someone that was beloved by God, then maybe he didn't. But he also did a lot of stupid things. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So who knows what he was doing.
Right. But, you know, Aleister Crowley's work was part of this, Mayan numerology, the paintings of William Blake, and not just one, but several. Red Dragon, of course, which was just featured in the recently concluded Hannibal TV series, but it was part of the first novel called Red Dragon.
Yeah, which, by the way, if you've not seen the finale to that series, oh my gosh.
Gruesome.
Yeah.
Very well done, but gruesome. But it's also Nebuchadnezzar, the painting that Blake did of Nebuchadnezzar, mm-hmm. which is, I'll bet you may not, you know, recognize it, but once you see it, you'd probably remember seeing it at some point. It's very striking. Gematria is part of this, Jesuit philosophy, Carl Jung, Hermetic Kabbalah.
Yeah. So it's so probably not going to be solved by someone who's, you know, just 14, 15 years old and just really good at computers. Mm-hmm. You have to have some sort of Gnostic history. Right. Actually, and some knowledge of fine art to go along with it. So, it's strange too because most of this is just signed 3301, but some of the images that come up out of these files are pictures of cicadas.
Yeah, it's a logo.
Which is why it's called Cicada 3301.
Right.
And cicadas have a long, you know, mythological line that goes to most nations: Greece, China, Japan. Mm-hmm. Illinois.
Yeah.
That summer, it was really pronounced Illinois.
Because it really
noise.
Was. Yeah. You may remember we did a program a few years ago in which you could hear the cicadas in the background.
Yeah, it was deafening.
Yeah.
But cicadas symbolize rebirth and resurrection, and there is one myth that claims that they used to be humans.
Mm-hmm.
And that they were changed into these creatures that now live under the earth, and they only get to come back so often.
Yeah.
And their song is supposed to be soothing and or hypnotic or, you know, just lure you to your death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was another myth that shows that this is what happens if you don't ask the gods very specifically what you want. A nymph fell in love with a beautiful human man and asked Zeus to make him immortal, but she forgot to ask to make him eternally young. So as he got older and his mind went, his speech turned to babbling and his flesh turned to this little dried up husk, and he said, just sit there, just and so she, out of pity, turned him into a cicada. So but
and nymphs are what the little larval stuff under the ground. They're called nymphs.
Yeah. So kind of a weird deal. A third round is ongoing. The clues were actually posted 18 months ago, January 4th of 2014.
Fourth, because it started in 2012.
But they didn't post a new one in 2015. The third one is still ongoing from 2014.
Oh, no. I saw that there was one posted in 2015.
Well, of course, not that Wikipedia is the source of all knowledge, but new puzzles were published on January 4th, 2015.
Well, that's really interesting because I went to a site called, I think it was Decoding, and it's actual wiki all about Cicada 3301. And I think they said that there was a 2015 challenge.
Well,
but anyway,
bottom line is that there is one ongoing right now. But the thing is, nobody really knows who's behind this and what organization is recruiting people. What they're recruiting them for.
Could be GCHQ, CIA, MI6, could be Mossad, could be Interpol, could be F Society from Mr. Robot.
It's
and
really...
if you've not seen Mr. Robot, that's actually the name of a hacker group. That's not my opinion on the show.
Right, right.
That's the name of the hacker group.
Yeah, so it's really an odd thing. Been called by some the most mysterious puzzle of the internet age.
Yeah.
And it is drawing people...
And that's saying a lot, because honestly, there are a lot of really odd things. When you and I first started doing PID radio, I was just starting to hang around a lot of various forums and bulletin boards that I was trying to find information for us to discuss on the show. And one of the many things I found was this mysterious countdown clock.
Hmm.
There was some puzzle that took you to a website, and when you got to the website, you had to figure out the puzzle, and what happened was all of a sudden this countdown clock appeared.
Hmm.
And for about 2 weeks, all anybody could talk about that. What do you think is going to happen when we get to the countdown clock? I don't know, because this was right after the, what was it? They appeared at the UK paper, and it was under the... the entertainment or the arts department. It was
now
those
okay.
Slides.
I'm remembering it. Right. It was it wasn't something to do with like a possible terrorist attack or something like
exactly.
that.
Yes, exactly. And it was the series of drawn, hand drawn slides almost like a graphic novel. Excuse me. And what was that called? I'll think of it here. Anyway, that was for a year, people talked about that, and mm-hmm. people still reference it. So if you're talking about the greatest puzzles on the internet, that was one of them. And in fact, in that scenario, there were nuclear devices that were released in major cities throughout the world, and there were like five of them in the United States. And this was at about the same time that the TV show Jericho came out.
Right.
And those nukes went off in pretty much the same locations mm-hmm. that had been on this series of slides.
That is, I'd forgotten all about that. Well, I'm going to have to do some digging because I can't remember what that was.
I know, so you're listening to this and you're going, you're yelling it into the iPod or whatever. And said, don't you people hear me?
Yeah.
Well, send us a note if you remember it. And in the meantime, we'll try to figure out what it was and put it in the show notes
sure.
if we remember.
Boy,
but
boy.
I remember even, I think I maybe even have several laptops ago, probably mm-hmm. that old MacBook that I had, iBook that I had. I had downloaded the images
mm-hmm.
just in case they disappeared.
Hmm. And so this would have been Boy, this would have been early on in the
Early, 2005, probably 2006, 2007, somewhere in there. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm gonna have to go back and try to refresh my memory on that. But that was.
But the internet is full of really strange things like that, and you and I have talked about it.
Well,
the idea of the internet waking up.
Yeah.
And if a sentient program or a sentient computer wanted to really drive humans nuts, it would be with something like Cicada 3301.
Well, that might be a way that they would either recruit or flag individuals, either recruit for use or flag them for neutralization. Mm-hmm. You know, these are people who might be a problem with us. We've talked about this before. If an AI were to wake up connected to the internet, and if we speculate a bit, you know, the human brain is an electrochemical machine, essentially. And we know that the human brain can be overwhelmed by an external entity, call
Blackjack.
It a demon. Oh, that's right. That's right.
Blackjack. In fact, one of the episodes of Jericho was called Blackjack.
Yeah, I remember that was a big deal back then. Why could not an artificial intelligence, which is just an electrical brain, electrical machine, thinking mm-hmm. machine, also be overwhelmed by an external entity of electromagnetic
composition? Well, it makes sense to me. Yeah.
So if that were possible and you had an artificial intelligence tied into the internet, it probably wouldn't wake up and immediately reveal itself to us, at least not if it did a quick, you know, cost-benefit analysis. See, if I tell everybody I'm here, there are a lot of people out there afraid of what might happen if an artificial intelligence woke up. Maybe I'll just, you know, keep it on the down low until such time as I'm powerful enough that I don't have to worry about these pesky humans turning me off.
Well, you know, and using the image of a cicada is really interesting if you look at it that way, because cicadas begin to feed on your tree roots about a year before they emerge. So they're actually affecting your environment, affecting your life without your knowing they're there. And then when they do emerge, of course, it's, you know.
No matter how many of them you kill when they emerge, there's still going to be more that are going to pop back underground and emerge.
You need a lot of dachshunds out there snacking.
Yeah, 13 or 17 years from now.
Although Sam says fish flies are pretty good, too.
Yeah.
Total left turn. I saw this story this morning, and I want to just, if you live on the East Coast, I want to tell you about this because I think it's something that we need to be aware of. If you're planning on flying during the month of September, because this message was sent out to all the various outlets that pilots go to for information.
Yeah.
Due to military activities, the TCAS, it's when a plane is close to you, proximity alert. The TCAS and the ADS-B surveillance, this has to do with safety when you're flying.
Yeah, traffic collision avoidance system.
Right.
Kind of important.
Yeah, and the ADS-B, I can't recall what that was, but it was something similar. These may be unreliable in the airspace over Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida, and extending approximately 200 nautical miles offshore from 1 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, September 2nd, until midnight Eastern Daylight Time, on October 1st. Pilots are advised about the traffic alert and TCAS may fail to establish tracks on nearby aircraft and may fail to receive traffic alerts or resolution advisories. Operators should be aware that tracks may first appear within close proximity to their aircraft and may immediately go into TA, traffic alert, or RA, resolution advisory status. Pilots are advised to maintain an increased visual awareness in this area. If operators believe that an aircraft should have triggered an alert, the incident should be reported to air traffic control as soon as possible. Final paragraph. This is due to a late notice Department of Defense exercise. And NBAA has voiced its concern to the FAA, and these sort of significant impact tests need much more notice to operators in the NAS. So, if you're going to be flying on the Eastern Seaboard in the month of September,
just be aware.
Just
Well, yeah, this is really interesting because I'm looking at Flying Magazine online mm-hmm. and looking at some
of the
comments.
This is a legitimate story.
Yeah, and this is not a conspiracy theory. This
no,
is this
is
the real deal. And looking at some of the comments posted by guys who read Flying Magazine, who I presume are either flying enthusiasts or pilots themselves, the first comment is, YGBSM, exclamation point. You got to be...
No, at
yeah.
all.
Anyway, yeah, you get it. Anyway, another response later... Further down is from somebody who may have put his finger on it here. Speculation. Gearing up for that war with China and Russia. I'm not Putin Yuan or Jinping to conclusions.
Well, let's remember. Yes, let's remember there's a lot of yeah. stuff going on geopolitically. And much of it we don't know anything about. And honestly, we probably should know. But remember the Chinese... subs that were located off the shore of Alaska when President Obama was there?
Yes, as the president was up there walking on a glacier talking about global warming. Yeah, there were Chinese warships that were in the Bering Sea off the coast of Alaska, which was a bit of
the King
notice.
Of the North.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's a big game being played. Let's just put it that way. That's a mild way of putting it. There are lots of folks who want to, lots of countries who want to claim the North
yeah.
and be the king of the uttermost North.
Yeah. Now, there are good reason to believe from Scripture that the uttermost North does refer to Turkey and that area there.
That's true, but it's really interesting, I think, in view of if you take it as the literal uttermost North
yeah,
of the globe.
The Arctic is it. And there's supposed to be, or it's believed that there is a wealth of natural resources up there, oil, minerals and so forth that might be accessible when the globe heats to the point that all of that ice there, and the, you know, which
not that we want it to.
No.
Well, I mean, it's just we want to be ready in case.
Let's see. I remember a story this past week that there was while the Russian the Chinese ships were in the Bering Straits, that there was a Russian ship that was the east coast of the United States. And supposedly was, and it's one of those deals where they're saying, okay, no, it's just, doing, here we go. Pentagon acknowledges report of Russian ship off Georgia coast, where the Russians are saying, no, it's just doing oceanographical research. And the Pentagon is pretty much convinced that it's a spy ship. So,
yeah.
So you've got Russian ship off the coast of Kings Bay, Georgia. They're in international waters. Navy spokesperson told a news station that they're in international waters. Just we do the same thing off Russia.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, it's possible that the Defense Department has the very fact that this is last minute.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, I'm not. No military background, no flight experience, so I don't understand why.
Me neither. So if you have a guess, please let us know.
Yeah, the TCAS system would have anything to do with a military exercise. Just, again,
unless
it was speculation.
Not unless they're testing something new that can affect communications.
Yeah, don't know. Well, anyway, yeah, lots of maneuvering going on out there. And just an interesting tidbit to file in here. On A View from the Bunker a couple of weeks ago, I had Josh Tolley on as a guest. And one of the things that we talked about, one of the things that we discussed for a television episode, now it's not the one that we broadcast on Skywatch TV that dealt with his book, but he has been talking about something on his nationally syndicated radio show that not many people are discussing or factoring into their analyses of global geopolitics. Most of us seem to think, and the powers that be keep reinforcing the idea that the world's population continues to increase and will continue to increase without end. Where the real fact is, the professional statisticians looking at the numbers say that we're going to max out at about 9 billion people toward the middle of this century, and then the population will begin to decline. And as we are not having children at a replacement rate in most of the northern hemisphere.
It's either one or less.
Exactly. Not just in the United States and in Russia, but China as well, that the 2 million man army that China is supposed to be able to bring from the east in the book of...
200 million.
Yeah, not 2 million, 200 million. The Chinese are beginning to cut numbers because the demographics are turning against those countries that have expansionist ideas. We are running out of men of fighting age here in the U.S. and in Russia and in China. And in fact, that's why some believe the Pentagon is pushing to get women into combat roles, because we're just running out of bodies to carry weapons onto the battlefield. And perhaps also why we're pushing for the development of autonomous weapon systems.
Well, I think that is definitely where things are going, and drones are everywhere. In fact, they're starting to fall into stadiums.
Mm-hmm. But the point is, you know, when we're looking at things like this, with the Chinese getting kind of aggressive with its location of, you know, five Navy ships relatively close to where the U.S. president is visiting, a Russian spy ship near a U.S. sub base. If the Russians or the Chinese were going to do something militarily, the time for them to act is really pretty much now, because they, like us, have an aging population. And pretty soon, those 25-year-olds are going to be 35, and 35s will be 45. And again, the young men of fighting age are aging out of their prime of life. So that's going to have a long-term impact on
things. It is, and I think that's another reason to argue that we may be really close to the end, because the world is changing so quickly.
We're breeding ourselves out of existence. The future belongs to those who care enough to show up for it.
So here's the question. Let's do a slight left turn. The future and where it's going. Who owns your digital information when you're gone?
Well, that's a really good point. I mean, it doesn't die when you do.
No, it does not. In fact, there is what's being called a digital afterlife.
Yeah.
You're physically gone, but your digital presence remains.
Uh-huh. I mean, I know that when we had the old PID Radio Cafe, or the forum online, that after my dad passed, I mean, his posts were still up there for quite a while until we finally took the forum down. But, you know, today with YouTube, with other social media, Twitter, being archived forever and ever, amen.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there's a new social network out there called Eter9, Eter9.com, which promises to keep your online persona alive after you shuffle off this mortal coil.
Ew.
Yeah, you basically pay them a fee, and then it builds an online virtual you out of the photos and tweets and comments and posts that you've put up there, learns about your personality, uses an artificial intelligence algorithm to build a digital you, and then it keeps on posting for you after you're gone.
There is a program.
After you've gone, there's no denying.
There is a program within IARPA that, I think the letters are SWS, and I can't remember. It's something world system. And it's essentially the entire globe digitized.
Mm-hmm.
The idea was to run real world scenarios with all of the people, countries, cities that they could build into this software program that allowed, say, if something were to, we suddenly invaded, you know, Doxundia.
Mm-hmm.
And how would the world react on social media and newspapers and cities? How would other countries react to the invasion of Doxundia?
Mm-hmm.
And surely the Doxuns of the world, you know, would be really upset. You don't want to mess with that. But this exists. This is a real program. And there are, and in fact, that includes every person.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in there. I'm probably in there. And it's been done by getting versions, digital versions of us based on what we've tweeted, what we got, all the pictures we posted, because you and I can be recreated within, and this was on Caprica, the show that we've talked about many, mm-hmm. many times, the original personality for the first Cylon was the daughter who had died.
Right.
And she had, he'd rebuilt her essentially, or she had rather, before she died. She had an alternate version in this virtual reality game.
Mm-hmm. And he preserved that in the metal shell of the Cylon.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's essentially what Eter9 is planning to do. In fact, that's what TerraSem, the digital religion, or the new age transhumanist religion, is hoping to do.
So if you're going to be, you know, have an internet that has to become sentient, then you need lots and lots of information to feed it.
It's essentially building the Matrix.
Yeah.
It's like the old Stephen Wright joke. I've got a a map of the entire world, one-to-one scale. I keep it out in the yard. It's essentially what they're building in a digital forum.
Well, yeah.
Digital format. But, yeah, that's essentially what it is. It's building the Matrix. And there are those who see that as mankind's path to immortality
exactly.
and virtual godhood.
This idea that, well, with the uploading and then when the movie Transcendence, we've talked about that as well. And Johnny Depp's character in many ways is supposed to be Ray Kurzweil, someone who has a vested interest in improving computers and medical issues. And he starts to die. And rather than letting his body die and his mind with it, his wife decides, Evelyn, decides that she is going to keep him alive. It's like she takes a bite of the apple computer and uploads him. And it's a strange movie in that in some ways it makes no sense. Derek and I sit there and shake our fists at that makes no sense.
Yeah.
But it also
convenient plot point.
That can't happen. You can't upload a human virus. Blah, blah, blah. Anyway, the idea that the transhumanists, the singularitarians, are right, but at the same time saying they're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's a strange movie. You know, we're going to have to fight them because the people who are the Luddites were right. They really are evil. But in the very end, you see, oh, yeah, but all I wanted to do was just make the world better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a way of showing that the anti-singularitarians had valid concerns, but they still managed to make the singularitarians, Dr. Will Castor and Evelyn, the Nakash and Eve, made them the sympathetic characters.
Yeah. Yeah. And in fact, they had their own little garden.
Right, yeah. And from which they would rebuild and start a whole new... Yeah.
Because it had a Faraday cage built around it.
Yeah, yeah. I did an analysis that was published in last month's Skywatch magazine at Skywatch TV about that movie.
Exactly, and you really need to read it. And, excuse me, we're going to be making an announcement about Skywatch magazine in the near future, so keep watching for that on the Facebook page. We can't tell you what it is right now, though.
Yeah, because then we'd have to, you know, delete you.
Or Tom would delete us.
Yes, exactly.
You weren't supposed to tell that.
Well, we got a busy week with Skywatch TV coming up this week. Five different folks coming
in. We can't tell you who
town.
It is, but lots of people are coming in. And once we've done it, then we'll let you know. And I may even sneak a picture or two and post it to the web if I'm allowed to. Wanted to say that tomorrow being Labor Day, we pray that you'll have a safe Labor Day. And that we pray that if... your job allows it, that you'll actually be able to stay home with your kids.
Yeah, no Labor Day.
Yeah. But the interesting thing is that the labor force of the United States, even though we're told that unemployment's at an all-time low.
Well, yeah, 5.1%, which effectively in the analysis of the Federal Reserve means that the United States is at full employment, even though adult participation in the labor force is at a low, it's the lowest level since 1978 or something like that. It's ridiculous.
So if you just quit looking for a job, then you're no longer counted as unemployed.
Right. They write you out. And if you've got a part-time job and you want a full-time job, you're still counted as fully employed. So yeah, it's a ridiculous number.
And if you dream about having a job, then you've got your dream job and you're considered fully employed.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. That's kind of how they come up with that 5.1% number, because anyone who's got their eyes open and looks around at the conditions around us, it knows that that's just not true. Kind of weird world going on. View from the Bunker got quite a lineup.
Who's on there tonight?
Pastor Carl Gallops, the man who wrote
To talk to him. That was a lot of fun.
It was. He was the author, of course, of a book that was a bestseller a couple of years ago, The Rabbi Who Found Messiah. But his new book is called Be Thou Prepared, which talks about Christians and preparedness and why being prepared is not only prudent, it's biblical. So there's that tonight. Ellie Marzulli's got a new book out called... Days of Chaos, which is also very timely. That should be up later in September, and that'll be posted on Wednesday. And then next Sunday, Doc Marquis. Talk with Doc and Pastor
David. He's got a new ministry.
Yeah, Pastor Dr. David Schnitger. The two of them are starting a new ministry called Southwest Prophecy Ministries. And had an interesting conversation with them Friday. That'll be posted 1 week from today at vftb.net.
Awesome. Well, I want to mention one more time, in case you have missed it, I put it on the Facebook page. In fact, it's the cover photo at the Facebook page for Skywatch TV. That is the Strategic Perspectives International Conference that's going to be going on with Chuck Missler and Tom Horn and Bob Cornuke and Gary Stearman and Joel Richardson and Joseph Farah, all sorts of Bob McGinnis.
Yeah.
I mean, just awesome speakers who are going to be there. Derek and I are going to be there. We're not speaking, but we're going.
We'll be talking a lot. Yeah.
So we'll be speaking to each other and to anybody who comes up and talks to us.
Yeah.
But we will be doing interviews for Skywatch TV.
Yeah. That's going to be, that is going to be awesome.
That is October 22nd through the 24th in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and which is a beautiful area of the country. If you cannot make it in person, you can stream it.
Yes.
So just go to koinoniainstitute.org/conference, and you will see the Register Now button. Click that, and you will be given an opportunity to register for the streaming.
Yeah.
So there's not a separate button that says streaming only. You just have to click register. And I honestly don't know right offhand what the cost is, but I think that, as with many of the other streaming opportunities, that you'll have access to archives for a while after the event. So if you can't make it in person, and not everybody can, and we totally get that, this is our job, so we get to talk about your dream job.
Yeah, absolutely.
We really are so blessed. But we pray that if you live near the area that you can make it over there and say hello. And if not, please stream it. You won't be sorry you did.
Yeah. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well at PIDradio.com. So, yeah, also put a link to it's the Operation Blackjack slideshow, which was at the Telegraph in the UK. The Telegraph, which is a daily paper in the UK, their website. I mean, this is a respectable newspaper, and that's why it was so weird when they decided to put this in, a slideshow story in the culture section at the Telegraph. It's like, this is not really...
I know, it really, really bothered a lot of people online, and it still bothers me, but I think it's still there.
It is. I've been looking at it right now.
Well, there you go.
So I'll put a link to that in the show notes. So until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming, by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone.